Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, back in 1986, a low-budget independent film premiered at the Chicago International Film Festival. It was John McNaughton's film, Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. And it still stands as one of the best psychological thriller-slash-horror films of all time. That was 30 years ago, and this weekend the Chicago International Film Festival will pay tribute to the film by presenting a world premiere restored version at the AMC River East 21. That's tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. McNaughton will be on hand for the screening, as well as the lead actor in the film, Henry, Michael Rooker. Rooker was a young actor at the time, and he's since enjoyed a great film career, including roles in Mississippi Burning and Guardians of the Galaxy, just to name a few. And, of course, excelled in television as well, starring in the hit show Walking Dead. Rooker spent his teen years here in Chicago. He went to Wells High School and the Goodman School of Drama, which is now the theater school at DePaul University. Michael Rooker, welcome to The Download. Good to see you.
Hey, good to be here, man.
Also joining us, director John McNaughton, who has directed several films, including Mad Dog and Glory and Wild Things. McNaughton was born here in Chicago, grew up in the Roseland neighborhood, went to school at U of I as well as Columbia College. Mr. McNaughton, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
All right, well, you know, let's talk about the – I mean, it's amazing to think that this movie – was premiered at the Chicago International Film Festival 30 years ago. What's it mean to you to have this kind of homecoming, to come back and to be part of a restored version 30 years ago at the same festival?
I don't know what to say about that. I mean, again, in my career, I've been reading the Stoics lately, Marcus Aurelius and such, and to accept your fate as it hits you. And like I say, I've been kicked to the curb so many times in this business and you know, took it in stride. So when something wonderful like this happens, I'm not, I should be more happy about it. But it's just like I could take the bad in stride. I'll take the good in stride. Just keep on making movies.
You know, for a restored version, to be able to see a younger Henry on stage, a younger Michael Rooker, what's it mean to you to have this, have such a presentation, to be such a focal point of this festival 30 years later?
Well, yeah, I think it's appropriate because it is 30 years later. I mean, the first time we did it was for the Chicago Film Festival. And so to come back after 30 years, it's like this. It's the little movie that could, you know. It never disappeared. New generations are seeing it over and over and over again. And it's a blast. I mean, it's really cool. Great to be back home. And seeing John here, we've seen each other over the years, but this is kind of nice. It's appropriate.
Yeah,
it's
we awesome. Had a good. You know, yeah. There are many actors I've worked with who I'd be just as happy never to see again in my life. but Henry, all of them. I would love to see Tom Tolles again. Unfortunately, he's left us. But yeah, we had a good time. We were a good group, walked away friends and remain so.
The movie, as I said at the top, still considered one of the best sort of thriller/horrors of all time. Take us to making it. I mean, when I say low budget, we're talking $110,000.
$100,000.
$100,000 for the production. Talk about, you know, how it came together, the process of making this film, Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Well, it's a very long story, and I won't go into it. I'll eat up all of our time. But eventually, the company in the South Suburbs, MP, was called Maljack at the time, which stood for now called MPI, which still stands for Maljack Productions Incorporated, were two brothers, the Ali brothers, Waleed and Malik. Waleed, unfortunately, is deceased, and they were in the video distribution business, and I knew them from previously, and a day came when they offered me $100,000 to make a horror film. And I happened to see very shortly after that meeting, I walked into someone's office over there, and I had no idea what. You know, they just make a horror film. That's it.
What'd you know of the genre at that point?
Oh, I was very conversant with horror films. But, you know, I sort of think that our film, because Michael, Tracy, Tommy all came out of theater, plus Richard Fire, the co-writer, that there's a lot of theater influence in that film. And it is as much a character study and a picture of social realism as it is of the horror genre. I went to art school, and to me, it's like when it's a work of art, and you take from here, and you take from there, and you take from here, and you take from there, and that's how we got started with that idea. But it was a true story, and we had to take liberties because it did not happen in Chicago, and we didn't have money to leave Chicago, so we set that true story in the environs of Chicago.
Well, I mean, when asked to do a horror film. You know, I mean, that can go in any different direction, especially in the mid-'80s, right? I mean, there's a lot of horror that was making from Friday the 13th on that were
great.
Grabbing people's attention.
Great, a lot of great TNA movies.
Right. But, I mean, for you guys, I mean, you talk about that influence, the idea of a theatrical influence and a character-driven story. I mean, I would even say this is more psychological thriller than it is horror, because it is just, I mean, it really is about serial killers, but it's really, really about the depth of the characters. I mean, really about what goes through somebody's mind. So it's not horror in the way that we kind of, who's in this cabin out in the woods? It's not that kind of thing, but
we call that Ooga Booga.
Right. So what attracted you, Michael, to that kind of, role?
Well, at the time, I was just looking for any kind of role, you know, and I was open for anything practically. I was in the middle of doing a theater piece, and the director of the piece had mentioned that John and those guys were doing this, and they're having a little problem finding the lead guy, and I should go over and audition. So I got the address and went on over. I was on my way to work at the time. So I wore my work clothes.
He wore the same clothes that when he showed up to meet myself and Richard Fryer for the role. We changed his shoes and nothing else. He wore that Carhartt jacket,
really?
The blue work shirt, the Dickies work pants. That was the Henry outfit.
That was my work clothes at the time. So.
So it saved us a lot of money on wardrobe.
That's how I got cast. And he could save us money on wardrobe.
And I'll also say, if you watch the film, before Henry kills anybody, he will always take off his jacket.
Always.
Because we only had one.
I couldn't get blood on it.
I mean, you had how far could you stretch $100,000 to make a movie in 1986?
Dude, pretty
far.
We brought our own lunches. That's
no craft services in this production, right?
No.
But I mean, really, at that time, and take us back to the mid-'80s, to be able to make an independent film, I mean, was that the norm to get that kind of money, to get 100? Because now you say an independent film is $10 million, $10, $15 million.
Well, like I said, I went to see Waleed one day, and we were going to work on some other project entirely, and there was footage that had to be bought, and the people changed the deal, and they said when they found out that those guys actually had some money that they could afford, I think they asked 10 grand, and when they found out that these are real guys with real money, they said, no, we said 20. And and then Waleed and his brother Malik said, you know, we don't deal like that. So they decided not to do that project, and they decided to do this project. So I went to the meeting, and Wally says, I'll give you $100,000. And as I've often said, if he would have said to me, I'll give you $10, can you make a horror film? I would have said, absolutely.
John McNaught and Michael Rooker in studio with me. Let's take a quick break. They, of course, the lead actor and the director behind the movie Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, which is going to be a world premiere. A restored version is going to be at the Chicago International Film Festival, the exact same place where it debuted 30 years ago. The screening will be tomorrow night at 9 o'clock at the AMC River East 21. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guests in studio, John McNaughton, Michael Rooker, the fellows who are behind Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, which is getting its 30-year anniversary, and a restored world premiere version will be at the Chicago International Film Festival, the exact same place it started back in 1986. The screening will be tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. John McNaughton and Michael Rooker will be on hand for the screening. Let me ask you guys, I mean, there's one thing about making the film, but then there's another about actually releasing the film, because we keep saying 1986, but it wasn't until a couple years later that it actually saw any sort of theater, because it was a very controversial film. There was, I mean, was it one of the first films that wasn't a sex film to get an X rating? I mean, it was not necessarily welcomed with by the censors.
No, I will just make it brief to say that I remember talking to the lady that it was submitted to the MPAA for a rating, and it came back with an X. They gave it an X, which you can refuse to take the X, but you know, then it goes out unrated, which is the same thing. And I had to talk to the lady, and I'm sure the Ali brothers and even myself, I didn't want to cut the film because it was short, it had 83 minutes, and it was, you know, what the film I wanted to make. But we were asking, well, what can we cut? You know, I remember the lady to this day saying, Mr. McNaughton, I'm afraid that, I have to tell you that there's nothing you can cut in this. We object to the overall moral tone. And that was it. And they just resubmitted it and got basically the same. It's still an X, which I'm rather proud of because, you know, it still packs a punch.
So that, the more so they can do just on sort of a moral code, they can say this is an X-rated film.
Well, we never had the cops. There was no hope. And, you know, again, right. when you're a young artist, you want to break the rules. And it's like, well, every story must have hope. But, well, let's make one that doesn't. You know,
being a part of that film, Michael, I mean, did you guys sense that it was going to be this sort of controversial film?
In the middle of making the movie, no, we, not at all. We're busy doing our thing, you know. And look, then and now, you know, people are making their movies, and they're pre-editing. They're editing their writing style. They're editing the action in the movie and the stuff that's going on in the movie for the MPAA, for this rating board. And, you know, you're not really getting what the artist really wants to show you. So that you're getting what the artist really wanted to show you in our movie. Mm-hmm. And that's something to be proud of. That's something over the years that's lasted, you know. I mean, multiple generations have seen this movie, you either turn around and walk out like some people did in one of our screenings, or you sit and you watch and you sit through it and you're like moved in some way for sure after this movie.
Well, the movie was helped, obviously. Roger Ebert helped it with a
yep,
good review.
Absolutely.
But talk about how audiences received this movie, because the MPAA obviously put its stamp on saying there's something morally questionable about this film. How did audiences respond?
Well, I have a great story involving Michael and a screening we had at Telluride. But there were two screenings. There was a screening at Telluride, and it was very controversial, and a lot of people walked. But then it started going around the festival that this was a serious film, and Roger Ebert got behind it. May he rest in peace. He was very kind to us, so they put on a second screening, so the screening goes up, and I think Michael and I may have introduced it, and our editor Elena was there, and Steve Jones was there, and a bunch of us were there, and so we didn't watch the film. We went across the street and got a beer and a hamburger or something, and we were coming back at the end. Well, it was an old theater that used to have those porthole windows in the doors so you could see into the theater.
Right, right.
And we looked in, and it was at the home invasion, the famous home invasion scene, and Michael was standing in the lobby, and we saw this young lady jump up from her seat and come firing down the aisle because she was walking. And Michael just like saw her coming, so he turned around. You know,
yeah, right.
back to the, and she comes blasting through the door, and Michael turns around and goes, "Boo!" And Michael is, a very warm and gregarious person, if you really know him, not at all like the character. And this gal I thought was going to, we'd have to call the ambulance. But Michael comforted her and hugged her, and it was, and everything, But it was.
I offered her a ride home.
Right. Well, Michael, let's talk about the role, because this was your first film. This was one that obviously was very intense. And even your process, and you talked about it a little bit. On Bill and Wendy today, just the process of setting yourself up for it. It's kind of famed how you sort of, kept yourself away from the other cast. Talk about that. What goes into that? What kind of intensity goes into that as an actor to play someone like Henry?
Well, first off, just to play that role, you look at it and you're like, ooh, I don't know if I can play this. I don't know what, I'm not sure how to do this yet. And it's a little scary. You're not sure what path you're going to take. Mm-hmm. So because of that, I decided to not at first to sort of stay in character, but I found it much more difficult to go in and out and joke with everybody and then not joke with everybody, and then so I just decided to stay where I was. Stay in the mood. Stay in. Keep my bubble. Keep myself safe from all the other influences around me.
You were a theater actor at the time. Was that similar to the process that you would do to other roles?
Sometimes it depends on the role, but this role was a little different, and so I just made that choice. I just made the choice to do it that way.
What do you have to grab from to do a role like this? I mean, in your personal life, to be able to understand the role and to grab. I mean, as an actor, What's the inspiration? What do you have to dig deep to find?
I don't – you know what? I'm not sure if you have to dig too deep. It depends on who you are, how you're raised, and how you're brought up, depending on how deep you have to go. But we make jokes about – I think I have uncles that are very similar to this guy. I watched videos of Henry Lee Lucas being interviewed by Texas Rangers, and I watched his body language, and I listened to his tone, and that's kind of where I got a lot of the body language, and a lot of the sort of the moodiness. He was sort of like that as well, and then he could be gregarious too. I mean,
he had a charm. He got
charming,
next to people. You know, he was able
fellow,
to get next to
yeah.
people, and he did it through this odd charm.
A very natural ability to make people smile back.
You know, I asked Michael as the actor. I mean, John as a director. I mean, you don't really think about it this way, but it's similar in the way. What do you have to draw upon to get the tone right to be able to put Henry Portrait of Serial Killer together? I mean, where are you going to find the finished product, the tone that we see in the movie?
Roseland.
Well,
really? I mean, Rosalind is a tough,
growing up.
Yeah,
you know,
growing up amongst people who aren't, or from less than stellar backgrounds, and some pretty tough kids and some pretty tough families and some pretty hard roads traveled. And also, by the time I got to make the film, I had, I had traveled the United States and Canada with a traveling carnival. And there were a lot of real hard cases that worked in that group. And, you know, those people have always been the people that influenced me, the people who have everything, you know, Skippy in their lives. They don't make for very interesting stories, mm-hmm. you know. And so
– But that's not to say they can't.
That's not to say they can't. No, you can – I mean, you know, the Shakespeare is about royalty. and it's pretty good. But I just find, you know, I was always sort of – as Jack Kerouac said, I'm always attracted to the mad ones. Those are the ones that have stories, you know.
Well, I mean, there is. I mean, there's something to be said about both of you growing up in Chicago. I mean, as a teenager, you were over in Division Ashland, sort of what we know now as sort of the Wicker Park, mm-hmm. Wells High School, Roseland, which is an entirely different area now. But the concept being that, you know, those were working class neighborhoods. I mean, you really had
in
to.
In the day, they yeah. were yeah. Quite a rough and tumble place.
So do you,
to say the least.
Both of you, and we'll talk about this. We'll take a quick break in just a second. But, you know, I want to find out, I mean, how much of that inspires you as artists today? I mean, not just with the role in Henry or you know, the directing and putting that film together, but in your works after the fact, what we see in the characters that you choose to portray, how much of that do you draw from that Chicago experience? That's
good.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. All right. I've primed you guys. We'll take the break. We'll come back. Michael Rooker, John McNaughton, my guest tonight. They, of course, remember, you know, Michael was Henry from Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, John McNaughton's film, that will be at the Chicago International Film Festival tomorrow night, 9 o'clock. A restored, world premiere, a 30-year anniversary since the day that it was, or the year that it was introduced in 1986. Both of them in town for the screening. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Michael Rooker and John McNaughton, my guests in studio. We're talking about Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. It's being restored and will be presented at the Chicago International Film Festival tomorrow night, 9 o'clock. River East 21 right here around the corner in Streeterville. It's so interesting as we talk, right before the break, we were talking about where you draw for not only the character but the tone of this film, and Chicago came up as an answer for both of you guys. Talk about what Chicago means to you, or means to this film. Why don't we start there? I mean, it's so amazing to see the film and see a lot of Chicago that's just not there anymore. This is 30 years ago. Talk about what you were trying to grab by using Chicago as a backdrop for the story.
Well, the main reason we use Chicago backdrop for the story because it didn't occur. That it is based on a true story that did not occur anywhere near Chicago. But I mean, we had $100,000, so we weren't going to mm-hmm. be out on traveling on the road and living.
But you could have done. You could have picked different places in Chicago. What
true.
Was it about the?
Well,
the places
I studied still photography at Columbia College as my minor subject, but it was my passionate subject because it was, you know, art, and used to spend a lot of time out in the streets taking pictures of. Yeah, Chicago is a tremendously photogenic place, and I posted some something about that, posted a picture, and someone said, well, have you ever been to Paris? I go, yeah, I've been to Paris quite a few times, and it's beautiful, and it's way more beautiful than Chicago, but it's not more photogenic. So I had all these places, kind of a lot of the located, oh, yeah, this scene, oh, I know this place, and I know that place. And, you know, we shot a scene out on the south side of what we used to, 99th Street Beach with Michael, that got cut out. But, you know, and some stuff we found new, but a lot of stuff was already, you know, in my memory bank. That would be a great place to do such and such. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's how a lot of locations got picked.
Yeah, but but there's also a grittiness to it. And, you know, you could shoot a movie today in Chicago and it'd be, you know, like you just said, I'm such a photogenic place. It'd be majestic. It could be anything it wants. In this film and the tone that you took, there is a grittiness to the Chicago that's represented.
Well, you're the old neighborhood.
Division and Ashland, right?
Enough said.
Yeah.
You know, it's a gritty place.
Well, tell the story about Richard. We were shooting it where he grew up, our writer, and we're trying to get quiet. We're out on the street, and Richard Fire was like, perhaps he had a beer or two, perhaps. And, you know, he was telling people to shut up. Well, these were gang kids he's telling to shut up. And Richard Fire was, you know, was not a tough guy. He was a man of the theater, and it's starting to get ugly, you know. Like, one guy just kept yelling and yelling, and we couldn't get quiet. And I'm looking at the people around us. I go, you know, if you know where, you know, Richard doesn't know who he, Richard should be. Calm down, Richard, because these are not people that you want to, like,
right,
get in their face.
Right.
You know, I'm telling you. And then I'll let Michael tell the rest of the story.
We're filming the scene with the lady and the little dog. Remember that?
Yeah.
A little sidebar. I did the dog. The little voice in the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did the voiceover for the dog.
I'm telling you, this is the DVD track here.
So we're filming that little moment, mm-hmm. and we're in the back alley. It's a dead end alley, as a matter of fact.
Right off north. It's on North Avenue.
And we're in the middle of shooting it, and here comes about, you know, 18, 20 guys down the alleyway, block our way, and they want to know where the big mouth is. They want him. Where is he?
They want him.
Nobody didn't want to say anything. I think I was the first one to speak up, and I said, he's right there. You can have him. Uh-huh. But can we keep him for about 2 more weeks? We need him for 2 more weeks, then he's all yours.
And so I
made it into a joke. But in the process, one of the leaders of this group spoke up and it said, animal. Is that you? And I go, yeah.
Yeah.
It was my buddies from high school. They're all my friends.
So saved by your relationship.
Saved by
right?
my relationship from the guys at Wells High School.
Wells High School comes in handy. Well, I mean, it's famed that you didn't have money for extras, so a lot of it were just pedestrians that walked by, right?
As a matter of fact, after that night, I think, didn't they help police the area?
Well, after we broke, then they were going around and keeping the area quiet. They, you know,
yeah,
hey, shut up over there.
They were policing the area for
another area you could cut corners. You had your own security staff that was volunteer from Wells High School. All right, you know, as I mentioned, you know, the idea of these places. I mean, this Roseland, Division and Ashland, where you guys grew up, where you not only sort of, you know, spent your days, but the impact it had on you. Talk about how do you take that with you with your career when you're doing other movies, when you're doing Mad Dog and Glory, or when you're doing Guardians of the Galaxy. Are you thinking about, you
well,
know?
Well, I'd have, like, to use some profanity, but there was one scene in Mad Dog and Glory where the guy was same thing. It was a crime scene, and he was yelling at these people who were on the street, and he was being very polite. And I said, you know, that's not how – he was a New York cop. It was supposed to be originally set in New York, but we wound up shooting it here. And I won't go into what he actually said, but, you know, it became very profane. And I go, yeah, that's how you speak it, in the
right.
on the street. So,
I mean, when you're doing roles, Michael, where does Chicago play in digging down to find your point of view, your tone?
Well, I've always been a very I'll take that back. I haven't always been very physical, very, open to any sort of physical
conflict
or altercation or anything like that. But I don't choose to find it. You know, I'm, and I was always as a younger kid when I first got to Chicago, I was a wee bit meek, and I was a very skinny little guy. But you'd have to push me and push me and push me until I struck out. But when I struck out, it was usually I'm striking out for good. I don't care to have you get back up, you know, that kind of thing. And so I've always sort of been that way. Growing up in this kind of neighborhood, people would get in fights all the time. And just I couldn't see how they did that. Why did they do this kind of stuff? I mean, they just do it to have fun doing it. And I never had fun doing it. And I was trying to learn how to have fun beating people up and stuff like that, but I never had fun doing it. And but my friends all had a good time doing it. They really enjoyed doing this kind of stuff. And that sort of gets into you after a while. You know, and I was like, I just don't want to be like this. I don't want to be like that. So I got into martial arts. I took judo and aikido and all this kind of stuff. So I could actually get physical and do stuff and throw people and have physical conflicts in a mock situation, which helped me feel better about, you know, if I ever had to get into a confrontation, I wouldn't feel like really hurting you. You know, I'd feel like just defending myself, and you'll be able to walk away afterwards. But earlier, it wasn't that way.
But there's something about that. I mean, that temperament, the concept of having it, not necessarily a chip on your shoulder, but being ready to protect yourself, defend yourself in that form.
I think every kid should know how to defend themselves and protect themselves.
I would say that I wonder, both of you as artists, I mean, as an actor, as a director, going into Hollywood and living that life where it's project to project, where there's a lot of, I mean, even you, Michael, I mean, you have a movie every year, you're a recognizable face, you get stopped on the street, but I would assume in your career there's been rejection,
you got to know how to fight. And growing up in these kinds of neighborhoods, you learn to fight. And you can learn to fight dirty or you can learn to fight clean.
Right.
And I always enjoyed fighting clean. And I know how to fight dirty, but I choose not to. But that translates into the scenes that you're working on. Like for example, JFK. Oliver Stone loved having the actors fight in the scenes. He wanted you to fight for the focus. He wanted you to fight for whose line was more important. He didn't want to write it in a way that this line is the most important line. You guys have to get kowtow to this. Build up to this line. No. He'd let you fight it out. He'd put you in a room and you'd physically, verbally fight out this scene.
Wow.
And it turned out to be sometimes absolutely great scenes because of that energy. And I think a lot of artists and a lot of actors, whether they've grown up in a pretty rough and tumble neighborhood like we did or some other other kind of neighborhood, You kind of have that already, you know, and it's sort of inside you.
You got to go get it.
Yeah.
John, for you, and you mentioned this in Bill and Wendy as well today, just the idea of this being an art film, you know, and you said don't let Hollywood hear that because, you know, like that's a business, that's an entertainment business.
Yep.
That's an area they're not interested in making art films.
Nope.
For you as an artist, as someone who wanted to make art films, you know, the same stuff that Michael's talking about, this idea of persevering, this idea of being able to handle and roll with the punches and be able to fight for that energy, that's a big part of being a director or making films in Hollywood.
Yeah, not giving up, for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, the interesting thing with Henry was, like I said, Waleed Ali gave us the money, and, the money was there when it needed to be there. It was four hunks of $25,000 each. But I remember Richard Fryer and I were working on the script and et cetera, et cetera. It was getting time. It was coming up on winter, and we had to get out and shoot the movie if we were going to shoot the movie. So I called Waleed, and I sent him the script. This was before I could email him the script, and dropped the script. And I said, I'll come back in a week, give you a week to read it. And, you know, I knew he was busy. So a week later, I called him. I said, well, Waleed, have you you read the script yet? And he said, John, you know, I've been very busy. No, I haven't read the script. But it's coming and I'll give you the first check and I'm sure it'll be fine. That is not the way you make movies in Hollywood. You've got a lot of folks that each want to have something to say about every creative aspect. And that becomes your fight. You have to fight them. No, that's a bad idea. You know, I mean, it's amazing the bad ideas that they come up with.
It's an art to that. It's an art to that, right? Yeah.
But this man, I talk about fighting. He's fought for this film from day one until even now today. I remember going, you know, I'm the actor, man. I got to go on. I got to make a living. I got to work at other things. And that's what I did. But I would come back and visit her, say, what you doing, man? What's up with him? And he'd go, well, we got this going on. We had this going on. Henry may be able. You were still pitching and pushing.
Well, that was my career. Without that, if that film wasn't seen, that I had no career. And right. I actually went, I think, like 16 months without any income whatsoever. When it was first finished, it was not well regarded. Yeah. It was not loved. And it had to get pushed and pushed and pushed until it hit a critical mass.
And bam, he fought tooth and nail every single day to get this movie seen.
And here it is, 30 years later.
Here
you are. I mean, I this kind of wraps us up to where we started. And I'll ask the same question, and maybe after our conversation, elicit some different response. But, you know, to all the things we talk about, fight and all the things that we've discussed here, to be back at the Chicago International Film Festival 30 years later, with all the fanfare and everybody wanting to see this, what's it mean to you?
I can't say. I don't know. I don't know what it means.
I got a couple of words. Yeah. Told you so.
There it is.
That's kind of it. Yeah, that kind of sums it up. You know,
John McNaught and Michael Rooker in studio tonight. They are going to be both at the screening of the world premiere restored version of Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, which will be at the Chicago International Film Festival tomorrow night, 9 o'clock at AMC River East 21, right around the corner here in Streeterville. 30-year anniversary since the first time it premiered. The first showing was at the International Film Festival in 1986. John, Michael, thanks so much for being my guest tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been fun.